Good afternoon. So last time we finished up talking about the context switch in XV6. Then we started talking about the POSIX standard. So this was a source interface that Unix implements that was originally based on. We had all these similar OSs. We want to make sure people can write applications for all of them. So we define how you write applications. We don't technically define like which of these functions are system call wrappers or not, though in this class we'll be speaking about the typical implementation instead of actually exactly what POSIX specifies. Talked about the POSIX main process management functions. We started with fork, which is to create a process by copying the current process. And the difference between the copies is that one copy, you'd have a return value of 0. That's the copy. In the original, you'd have a return value of the process ID of the new copy, which would be different from the original. We also had exec. So if you can create a new process running the same program you're running now, how do you make create a process running a different program? The answer is you create a new process, and then you get rid of your own program from that process and replace it with something else. With exec. So you specify a program to load, the arguments, and so on, and the exec call replaces your program with that, but with the same process ID, and same we saw a process control block backing it. And if you can run a program, you finally need to, you want to wait for it to finish, or figure out if it finished, or figure out if it crashed. And so we had wait PID for that to get the status or wait for a process that you started. So it gave you this information, and the idea is that you can call this for any process that was your child process, that is when you forked, and only if you forked it. And in fact, the OS would keep around information about a program that you forked until you waited for it, just in case you wanted to figure out did it terminate normally or not. Or something like that. So any questions about any of these things we talked about last time? Someone look for me. Yes.
What was the advantage of forking and execing over just making a new process?
The question is why do we have fork and exec over making a new process? So as I discussed, some people would say there isn't one, it's just worse. But the reason why people think fork is an elegant design is that we don't have to have our create process function specify where's the terminal for this process, and what directory is it going to be in. We don't have to have all those extra parameters or some way of specifying them. Instead, we just change the process to be in the right directory, to have the right terminal open, and so on before we exec. So that's the elegance. Whether it's worth it, there's dispute on that. Other questions? Okay, so we have these process management functions, and reason we're covering this is to talk about shells. So a shell is the name for a program which allows a user, like a person at a keyboard or a mouse or some other input device, to run applications. So the shell is the user interface to these process management functions. Like, you don't actually call wait PID yourself when you're sitting in front of a normal desktop. You use something which does that. So the upcoming homework is to make a simple shell. And it's going to be a command line shell, the one that POSIX provides. There's also a graphical shell. So the term is is general enough to include the Finder or Explorer, Finder in OS X or Explorer in Windows. Like, those are shells. They let you run applications, navigate the file system. Like, you're going to write, sort of a subset of the POSIX, of a POSIX shell. So this includes things like searching for programs. So in your shell, you can type ls. And, there's no ls program in most of your directories, so it's looking for ls. And it knows to figure out, it's in /bin. Or if you type make, it knows it's in /user bin, or wherever it happens to be. We're not having you implement that. It's not hard to implement, just didn't think it was worth your time. Another feature that POSIX shells implement is redirection, so changing where the input and output goes, and pipelines, which is putting one program's input and output to another. So we'll talk about those a lot more today because we're going to talk about files. Files are obviously very relevant to those features. First, let's just talk about how searching for programs work. So the convention in POSIX is there's a path environment variable. So this is information passed to the program. There's a standard library function getty env to ask what's the value of an environment variable. And basically what a typical shell does, you know, or at least one possible implementation, is you just check every directory and try to exec the executable in that directory. I don't have any checks after exec because if it fails, I just try the next directory. And if it succeeds, I'm not in the loop anymore because we replaced the current program, including this loop. Okay. So let's redirection. That's the other one. So redirection, you can make the output go somewhere or the input come from somewhere. And pipelines, just say one program's output goes to the next program, and so on. Our shell assignment, in addition to like we have a subset of the features, so like there are other shell features I didn't mention, like CD, we don't have that. We also simplify things dramatically by not making you write a fancy text parser. So please do not write a fancy text parser in that. That's not a good use of your time. So everything is space separated. This is not required by normal shells. We're just doing it because it makes things a lot simpler, and this is not a class about how to do text parsing well. This is about operating systems instead. Okay. And that assignment is, there's a checkpoint due in 1 week, you know, a week after the XV6 intro assignment, and the final submission a week after that. So, said to deal with redirection and pipelines, we need to know about files. So I'm going to talk about what are files. And in POSIX, Unix is sometimes called has the idea of everything is a file. It's maybe not everything, but a lot of things are files. So it's the file is the interface we've chosen that the OS provides to programs to access devices, like a terminal, a printer, to access files on disk, things that store data on a disk, to access networking via something called sockets, which we'll talk about a little later in the semester, or to communicate between processes via pipes, which we'll talk about today. And files have this common idea that they have these basic operations. We can open or something equivalent to open a file and close a file. And once we have a file open, we can read and write it. In the file interface, we have this common properties that you need to do open or some equivalent operation before you use the file. So there's a setup. You can't just say this file name, write to it. You have to open it first. And they're byte-oriented. We have these read and writes, and they work in terms of bytes. And that doesn't mean the underlying device actually works in terms of bytes. For example, hard drives and solid-state disks don't work in terms of bytes. They work in terms of larger units of data, whole blocks of data. And that's fine. The operating system needs to handle the difference. And they also have an explicit close. You need to actually close the file. If you don't, it stays around. And there's no like guessing when you're not using the file. You just keep it around until you close it. Okay. So, questions about this sort of these general concepts. So let's talk about some of the implications that we're hiding that it's not this sort of byte-oriented thing. So our interface is read some bytes or write some bytes, but that's not how the device works. And I'll give some examples with, say, reading. So if we're reading from a keyboard, the keyboard doesn't, we don't just like ask the keyboard, here's a byte. The keyboard just gives the OS, here are some key presses. And that's not how reading from like the terminal works. You read from the terminal, you get whatever was typed, or is typed in the future. And because you can get what was typed, this means that when a key press happens, the operating system actually needs to do something about that, even though we're not reading yet. It needs to take that information and store it somewhere. So there's going to be a buffer, typically in the kernel, for key presses that happened that might be right in the future. And later on, when your program calls read, then the operating system is going to copy from that buffer and return that from read. It'd also be the case that you call read first, and the operating system needs to wait for the keyboard to give it something, in which case, usually, we'll use the same code, just you wait first, and then you, again, when you're done waiting, you copy from that buffer to return from the read. And it's probably going to be similar for reading from disk. So you'll ask to read from a file on disk, and the operating system will ask the disk for not just the single character you're reading, but the entire block, because that's all the disk knows about. It only knows about big blocks of data. So we'll get that whole block of data into a buffer, copy from that buffer to return from the read. So questions about this procedure? So this also occurs in the other direction. Let's say I write a character that needs to go over the network. Like, I'm SSH'd into a machine, and I'm outputting into SSH. So I'm outputting to the network. Well, what's going to happen is we're going to call write. The operating system's going to hold a buffer of stuff waiting to go on the network. And eventually, it's going to figure out the network is ready for that data and actually send it, probably not one byte at a time. Probably in larger chunks. If I'm writing to disk, I'll write one character to a file, but because the disk doesn't actually have a write one character operation, the operating system will get the whole block of data together, store that in a buffer, and eventually, when the disk is ready for it, write that data back to the disk. So this gives us our two essential I/O operations, which are in POSIX are a function called read and a function called write. And what they essentially do is you might think of them as I read from the keyboard, I'm actually copying from the keyboard, but really what they're doing is probably copying from a buffer in the operating system. But they do have the property that they're going to sometimes wait. And the rule in POSIX is that the default behavior is if you read and the buffer doesn't have anything to give you whatsoever, it will wait until it has something. And if you write and there's not enough space in the buffer, it's going to wait. Otherwise, it will just use the buffer and return basically right away. And the actual I/O is going to be based on how the device works. So it's going to be based on when the network says you can send something or when the disk has the data available or is ready to accept a write. It's not necessarily exactly when you do reads and writes unless you do something special to tell the OS, I care about this. The default behavior just uses the buffers, and that's what your read and writes go to. So questions about that idea? Yeah. So the actual I/O operations are going to occur when the device is ready, not when you do the read or write necessarily. So when you read from the keyboard, that doesn't mean you're waiting for the keyboard to give you something if it's already in the buffer. When you write to like the network, the write is done when we copy to the buffer. That doesn't mean the data is actually sent to the network yet. Now, since I'm talking about buffers, you might be familiar with other buffers. So usually, when you've done I/O, you've probably used something like cout or printf or some other language-level I/O feature. And these have their own buffers. These buffers are in addition to the ones that exist inside the kernel. So yes, there are two layers of buffering. in typical I/O. Yes?
So when you call flush on one of those, which buffer is actually?
So the question is, I call flush, what buffers actually get emptied? Yeah, so fflush or cout.flush empty these buffers only. As far as cout and printf are concerned, data is flushed when I've given it away to the OS to handle. Then I'm done with it. Even if it maybe not. So this means that if you flush, you know, cout and you have an SSH connection, that doesn't mean the data's been sent over the network yet or anything like that. It just means it's out of your program and into the OS. Other questions about this? And that's a very subtle point, that the flush operation doesn't do maybe what you anticipate. It doesn't actually make it go to the device generally.
It just gets erased.
The question is, does it just get erased? It's in the operating system's buffer, and sort of the hope is that means it's going to eventually go to the device. And of course, if you really cared, there are ways of figuring out, did it actually go to the device? But that's not the normal interface that normal programs use. Normally, you're done writing when the operating system has it and is going to make it go to the device. You're done reading when the operating system is copied from its buffer. So you might say, why do we have these extra layers of buffers? So there are two big advantages to that. So one is that it's possibly a better interface. So read is just read a certain number of bytes. We can have better operations like read line and things like that. Another thing is that this allows less system calls. So typically read and write, because they interact with device drivers and their buffers, that's the buffer being used, is the one the device driver knows about. That's all kernel mode stuff, so it needs a system call. And a system call is a lot slower than a function call, so it'd be good to do less of them and with more data per system call. But this standard I/O buffering lets you do that. Yeah?
What do you mean by better interface?
So question, what do I mean by better interface? So, for example, there's a getLine function in I/O streams. If you want to do that with read, what you have to do is you have to read some data, find the new line in it, and figure out what to do if you write extra. So it's making the more convenient reline operation and similar things like that, rather than you having to deal with a byte-by-byte level. Okay. So we know about sort of reading and writing. We also have names for files. So there's this file system, which is our collection of named files. Not all files are going to have nice names. We'll see pipes are an example. We'll see later of files which don't really have names. But for named files, they're in this file system, which we'll talk about much more later. But I'm going to give the sort of interface level view that you're probably familiar with. We have what are called regular files, to distinguish them from files that represent devices and so on, which are just named collections of bytes. They also have some extra data like sizes, modification times, and so on. And we have directories, which are folders, which form a hierarchy, like a tree, containing files and other directories. And when you have named files in POSIX, you access them with the open function, which is usually also a system call. So it takes a path to the file and a bunch of flags represented in an integer, which is just a bunch of constants or together, and an optional mode, which will, for our purposes, might as well be this octal constant here every time. So you see open here. It returns what we call a file descriptor, and we'll get into what that is later. So first, let's talk about the path. Path, file name, there's two types of paths in POSIX. There's absolute paths that start with a slash. So they're based on the root of the file system, a common location that's the same for all programs. And then there's relative tasks, which don't start with a slash. They're based on the current working directory, which is an information that's stored in the process control block. So every process has its own current working directory. There's a system call chdir to change it. And that's what those are based on. An open returns an integer. So how does an integer represent a file? So it returns what is known as a file descriptor. So a file descriptor is an index into a table of open files for your program. So every program has basically an array of open files. This is an index into that array. Or if there's an error, it returns -1. And all the system calls that deal with open files take one of these array indices. And that's how you represent an open file. And we can see this actually very vividly in XV6. So in XV6, I said open files were represented by this line of the struct proc. It's literally an array of pointers to information about files. So file descriptor 0 is element 0 of this array in your current process. And something to note about how these work, which is common to POSIX, is that this is a pointer. So two processes can have two file descriptors that refer to the same open file. That's perfectly fine. And when a fork happens, in fact, they will share the same pointer. So fork keeps track of enough to make sure we don't like free things that shouldn't be freed. Like we don't have dangling pointers, but they should have pointers to the same thing. And if you don't have a file open, what XV6 has chosen to do is put a null pointer in that entry. So closing a file is just setting the pointer to null and maybe cleaning something, freeing some memory. So let's look at what the struct file is in XV6. So XV6 supports basically two kinds of files. We have pipes and inodes. Inodes are how they represent regular files and I believe also devices. And pipes are how they represent a special type of file called pipes, which we'll talk about later. And you know, this is one possible design. You can imagine other things, like you can imagine doing this with classes and subclasses. There's also a reference count. I told you that when we fork, we just have pointers to the same open file. This is how we make sure we don't free any of these open files until no one has a pointer to it. And when you open the file, you ask to open for reading or for writing. So you saw that here in my examples, we have open read only, open read write. So when you do the open, we check, are you allowed to read that file or are you allowed to write that file? And we remember how you opened it, whether you can read or write, and we check this when you call the read or write system call. Like, did you actually open it for reading or not? And we also keep track of the location in the file for files on disk. Like, we need to know where are we in the file, at the beginning, offset 0, or somewhere in the middle, what byte number. And then we have some pointers to the actual information for each type of file. Yes? Question, why do they use a car for readable and writable? C doesn't have a Boolean type. Well, C in 1990, whatever, when they made XV6, didn't have a Boolean type. And it's just it's a small integer type. Other questions? Yeah. The reference count is after we fork, like we'll have both the parent and child process will have a pointer to the same struct file. So we track how many pointers there are to it, so we don't free this until it goes to 0. Yeah?
If there's only readable and writable for each file, how do you have group permissions for...
Question, if there's only readable and writable? So this is kind of deceptively named. This is represents an open file. So it's whether our handle to the open file allows us to read or write. So we've done all the permissions checks on open. And this is just recording the result. Yes, you were allowed to read when we opened. That's all it's recording. Yes?
Why does it use like specific pipe pointers and inet pointers instead of using like a generic void pointer?
Question is, why does it use specific pipe or inet pointers? I don't know. Rather than using a generic, they made a choice. Okay. So this is how XV6 represents an open file. So we have the information about where we are in the file, whether we opened it for reading or writing, and so on. So, and each of these, we have file descriptors that refer to them based on an array index. And there are three file descriptors which are special. They're not special because open, read, or write behave differently for them. They're just special by convention. So file descriptor 1, we call standard input. File descriptor 0, we call standard input. 1, we call standard output. 2, we call standard error. So if you know standard in, standard out, standard error from C, or C in, C out, C error, this is just by convention what file descriptor they use, what array index they pass to the system calls when you use C in or C out or C error. And there are constants for this if you don't want to memorize the numbers in the UNI standard.h header. Now you might say, that seems not awfully nice, but if we're thinking ahead, I told you I want to like make a program's output go somewhere else. And that seems like I want to make file descriptor 1, its output, go somewhere else. And if we look at our open system call, there's no argument which is choose the file descriptor you return. So we're going to have a solution for that later. So another thing open has is we have these flags. So most notably, this is, do you want to read or write? This is also where you can specify things like, do I want to append to a file, so start at the end rather than the beginning? Do I want to truncate it? Do I want to create it if it doesn't exist, and so on. They're all documented. We mostly won't care. And there's also a mode, which is the permissions of the newly created file. We'll talk about these permissions much, much later in the semester. For now, always use the octal constant 6666 is going to solve most of your problems for like the shell homework. Okay, so we have open. There's also close. So close says take a file descriptor, get rid of it, deallocate that array index. So you can think of this on XV6, it just sets that array index to null. And also make sure we free memory eventually. Since we're only setting our array index, if we fork and close in the child, it doesn't affect the parent, or vice versa, even if we share the open file. Because we're just changing our pointer to null. And this returns 0 on success, and -1 on error. Yes, close can fail. One example is if we had something in the buffer, maybe the OS will try to write it before it finishes the close and tell you, oh, by the way, that didn't actually work. Sorry. Whether that's useful information to any application, who knows? But it's a possibility. So now that we know about open and close, let's talk about our shell redirection. So we can have input redirection, where we run a program and replace its standard input, which is normally the terminal, with input.txt. Or we run a program and replace its output with output.txt, the standard output. And remember, I mentioned that when we do exec, it doesn't change the open files. So we have some files open before exec, we call exec, same files are open. So what we want to do to implement this is we want to change those files just before we exec. And we know that when we fork, it's going to copy the original. So what we're going to do typically is fork, then open the files to redirect, and then somehow in our child process make them the standard error output, input, whatever we need, using something called dupe2, which we'll talk about in a bit. And typically the way we'll do this is we'll call fork, And then we'll open the new files in the child and exec. So we won't change the file descriptor table in the parent. We'll start with a copy of the parent's file descriptor. So if we aren't changing the output, we'll leave that the same. And we'll change what we need to, then exec, right, with that, everything set up for the redirections we want to do. So questions about this idea? Yeah.
Did you go back one slide?
Here? Or?
Yeah, that one.
Okay. Other questions? I saw so this is. So for doing our output redirection, step one is we're going to, in our child process, before we exec, we're going to open output.txt for writing. But we need to make that file descriptor one. So when we do the open, we're going to get a new file descriptor, because that's how open works. Open isn't going to just magically replace your output. That would be very inconvenient for like writing to a file to save something. It's going to get you a new file descriptor, and we're going to make that file descriptor for standard out number one. So we need a function, basically, to assign a file descriptor to a particular entry in our table. And basically, what we want to do from the point of view of this array is we want to just copy the pointer from the file descriptor we just opened to index one. And, well, we can't actually do that, because this is part of the kernel stuff. And if we try to access that, we'll get the equivalent of a seg fault. So we can't do that directly from user space. So there's a system call that just does this operation for us. And it's called dupe2, and it takes the file descriptor that we opened and the one to copy to, and the one to assign to. So questions? Yeah.
So if the child, reassigned as standard out or standard in, and then the parent wanted to run it in the background and use standard in or standard out.
So the question is, if I do this in my, so I have here, I have open, and I'm reassigning, and I do the dupe2 here. Let's say I don't want to wait PID, but I want to use output. Right? That's your question?
Yeah.
Does that work? Does it not work? So remember that we copy the list of open files from fork. So what's going to happen when we do the dupe2 is that we're going to replace this table entry to point to a different file, but that's not going to change the parent's table entry. So its index one is still going to point to the terminal. The child's index one points to the newly opened file, it's fine. So this index one here is going to point to the terminal. We don't have any conflicts, as long as we do it after we fork. Any questions about this? So that gives us our tool for step two. So we take our old file descriptor, the one we got from open, and we want to turn it into file descriptor one. So we dupe2 to one, and that's what it does. And you might say, I missed some detail. So I just said it did this assignment. What about closing file descriptor one beforehand or something? We don't have to do that. If file descriptor 1 will be closed automatically by this, basically. So it will, if it's the last reference to whatever that file is, it will free the memory. We don't have to worry about it. It's the job of the implementation of dupe2 to handle making sure we don't leak memory or anything like that. Okay. So here's an example of using dupe2. So here, I flush standard out. So I clear the user space buffer, but not the kernel one. So I write the stuff out. Then I open output.txt. I check open if it failed. And if not, I make the file descriptor it returned also be standard out. So after I do that, if I call write going to either file descriptor, I will get the same result. They will go to the same place because they're actually pointers to the same file. And then I close the original file descriptor. And that's fine, because this close, remember, all it's doing is setting, this is just set a pointer, to zero. We're just changing a pointer. We're not affecting the file that we copy the pointer to. So we had two pointers to it after the Duke 2. After we close the one open return, we have one, but it's the one for standard out. And then I can printf, that goes to standard out, and that's going to output to the normal. Yes?
Why do we need to close the original copy of the file descriptor?
Question is, why do we need to close the original? You absolutely don't in this example. So I'm bringing this up partly because in your shell homework, if you don't close things like this, you might run out of file descriptors. So you should get into the habit of closing your extra file descriptors. Do that. And in particular, in a shell, this matters more because you think of open the file to redirect to it and then exec. Calling exec passes all your open file descriptors. So even though there's no reason the program you're running is going to use file descriptor 10, if you have file descriptor 10 open, it's still open after you exec. Even though it's not one of our conventional ones. Yeah?
How big is the array of file descriptors?
Question is, how big is the array of file descriptors? This varies. Sizes, I've seen I think it's 16 entries in XP6, I think, but in a quote unquote real OS, I've seen numbers from 200 to 100,000. Yeah? Question is, after they point to the same thing, why do I write to both? I'm just saying in this comment that this write and this write would do the same thing, not that you should do both. Yes?
Why is it important to flush before we do this whole thing?
The question is, why is it important to flush before we do it? So the way printf works is that it's going to just write to file descriptor 1. And it's going to do it whenever it thinks it needs to clear its buffer. So if I don't flush in advance, printf, let's say I did, printf test here. If I don't flush in advance, it's possible after I do this, we're going to say, oh, my buffer is full now, so I'm going to write test this to standard out. And we presumably don't want that to happen, so that's why I flushed first. So to make sure that everything I wrote to standard out with printf beforehand actually goes to the not output.txt, but where it was supposed to go, where I thought I was sending it when I called printf earlier. Now, for your shell, this won't matter much because obviously you aren't printing anything to standard out you expect to go anywhere.
Should you ever flush a standard in?
Question is, should you ever flush standard in? What flushing standard in does is not intuitive. I won't cover it because I don't actually remember the details, but it's not actually super useful. Other questions? So that's dupe 2. There's also, as you might guess by the name dupe 2, there's a function called dupe. So dupe is like dupe 2, except it, instead of going to a specified file descriptor, it reassigns it to a new file descriptor. Chosen the same way open would choose a new file descriptor. So we have these functions. So you can think about how they manipulate the file descriptor array. So open is going to set an entry with a new file descriptor to the new file you found with the name. Close, dupe 2 is going to do that assignment. Close is just going to send an entry to null. And fork just copies the table, all the pointers in the table. So it's a pointer copy. We aren't doing deeper than the pointers, just the pointers. And I'm admitting from here that you, in fact, can't leak memory. So like we can't just set it to null. We actually need to check, do I need to free some memory? I'm just omitting that detail here. Questions about this? Okay, so I talked about managing file descriptors and mentioned that the relationship they have to what you use with standard in, standard out. Those are just some conventional numbers. Otherwise, we're just manipulating array entries. We also need to talk about how we actually do reads and writes. Like I showed you the general concept that we have this buffer, read gets something from that buffer or waits for it to have data. And write puts something in that buffer or waits for it to have room for something. We also need to actually know more details about read and write. So here's the POSIX functions for read and write. So read takes a file descriptor, a buffer, and the size of the buffer in bytes. Write takes a file descriptor, a buffer, and the size of the buffer in bytes. And they both return the amount that's read or written, or if there's an error, they return -1. SIST is just assigned integer type. If they return an error, the special variable errno contains an error code that you can examine to figure out what happened. As a special case, read can return 0 to indicate end of file. This is not an error. So read returning 0, not an error, it just means we're out of data for you to read, but everything's fine. And all these functions can read or write less than you request, which is why they return how much they read or wrote. So if you read from the keyboard, it's pretty obvious why you might not have as much to read. Read will generally try to return what's available. So like for reading from the keyboard, it will return the keys it has right now, but it's not going to wait. Just because you asked to read 100 bytes, it's going to give you what it has if it has something, rather than having you wait. And writing can also potentially return less than write less than you request. An example of this is if there's not enough space, or if there's an error while you're writing, for example. So let's say you're writing to a file on disk, you call write with a megabyte of data to write, and the operating system manages to write half a megabyte to disk, and then the disk fails. It's going to tell you, I wrote half a megabyte, and you'll have to try again for the rest. Yeah?
What if there's more there to read than you think?
The question is, what if there's more to read than you think? So the question is, what if I read less than requested, and I still want to... what if I don't read enough?
Yeah, it's just too much.
So read and write up to count bytes. If there's more stuff than count, you have to call read. For reading, you have to call it again.
So then you have to keep track of that offset.
So, and you'd have to keep track, yes. And yes, you would have to keep track of your offset or anything else about where you are in whatever file. So here's an example of using read just one byte at a time. So here I'm reading from standard in. Into a buffer, my buffer is this character. It's a one byte buffer, so I pass 1. And I get a value, and as long as it's greater than 0, which hopefully means 1, I add it to this string in C++. And after this is done, I check, did I exit this loop because it was -1? And if so, I print out an error message. Otherwise, I know I reached the end of the file, everything's fine. Questions about you see here? So I mentioned that it reads up to that amount. So this means that if you're being careful and want to read a fixed amount, you actually want to call read in a loop. Now, maybe for some types of files, this isn't necessary. But in general, this is what you have to do. And you can think of cases where this makes sense that you'd have to do this, like reading from the keyboard. typical applications, when to get key presses as they happen, or reading from the network, we're gonna, you won't get all the data at once. The OS will give it to you as it gets it. So in this case, you call have a loop, and you need to figure out how much do I have left to read, where do I want to put that answer, where in my, array do I want to put the answer, and so on. Yeah, your question? The question is, doesn't this block the current thread? Yes. So read is going to wait until it has something to return to you, or that something could be end of file or an error, but it's going to wait until it has something to give you.
Do we have to dedicate single thread?
So the question is, do we have to dedicate a single thread if we just want to continuously get input? So as far as what I've discussed, read, yes. And the same with write. It turns out there are options for changing the default behavior of read to say, when you don't have data for me, just return immediately. This is not the default, because most applications don't want that. But that is an option. There's a function in POSIX to say, for this file descriptor, start doing that. But by default, yes, it's going to wait, it's going to put your process to sleep, let other things happen until data comes in. So I mentioned partial reads are possible. So POSIX actually says for regular files, read gives you what you request unless there's like an IO error or something. Like if you ask to read 4K from a file, if the file has 4K of data, you're getting all of that no matter what. But for other things like terminals, networks, you'll get what's available. Write, here's my example of write. But write, we can also have partial writes. This typically only happens when there's an error, though. The default behavior is usually that you ask to write, and it's going to try to write everything before it returns. You can, again, there's a way of turning that off and saying, if you can't write right away, return, but that's not the default because most applications want to do something like this and write the whole string, not have to call write again if you can't write it, if there's not space right away in the buffer, for example. But you need to do that. You'd have a similar loop, and you'd also want to always, regardless of whether you have this loop, do the error checking to figure out if the write failed, at least in cases where you're like writing a file. Like it's really annoying for your application to not say, oh, actually couldn't save that, and say that by you try to load the file later and it's not there. So partial writes, then the typical default behavior of write is that it's going to wait until it completes. So this means that completes equals in the kernel buffer. So this does not necessarily mean that it's at the device, but the kernel has all the data, and it's going to do the write at some, actually send it to whatever device needs to be sent to at some point. That's what it means for a write to complete. And you might need to wait because the kernel buffer is only so big. So we need to wait for there to be room in it. Okay, and we talked about standard I/O. Just mention, since we talked about raw read and write, probably don't mix with standard I/O in a program. It just tends to cause unexpected effects. If you need to do this, you should use calls which specify the clear out buffers and so on, like I did by flushing before I opened in duktude. Because if you don't do that, like there will be some stuff in the standard I/O or I/O stream buffers that you thought wasn't that you thought you would read or write, or read or not write, will be confusing. So questions on read and write? Okay, so we have reading and writing. And we also have this special kind of file I alluded to. So I said XV6, we had pipes and everything else. So what are pipes? So pipes are a file for communicating between usually two programs. bytes go in one end of the pipe and come out the other. And there's a function call to make a pipe called pipe. So rather than using open, the equivalent function for a pipe is pipe. And the most common use of these is implementing shell pipelines. So I showed you run a program, send its output as input to the next program. The way we're going to do that most commonly is by creating this special pipe file, making that the output of one program and the input of the other. So let's look at using this pipe function. So here I call pipe, and pipe takes an array of two file descriptors. So we have one pipe, but each end is a separate open file. One end is the read end open file, the other end is the write end open file. So after you create this pipe, you first need to see if it fails. Why would it fail? Maybe we're out of memory. Maybe we're out of file descriptors. Just want to check. Otherwise, you get the read end, which by convention is index 0, which you don't have to memorize. Look it up when you need it. And the write end is index 1. And we can write to the write end. And after we do that write, later on we can read the data we wrote from the read end. Okay, so questions on this thing? Yes.
Wouldn't you read before you write?
Question is, wouldn't you read before you write? So you can do this in any order. And the read is going to work like our normal read did. So if you remember when I talked about buffers, like we could read before or after the data was there from the keyboard, the same thing is going to apply to this pipe. There's going to be a buffer for this pipe in the kernel. And when we call read, it's going to try to copy from that buffer. If it can't, the read is going to wait until a write happens to give us some data in that buffer to return from the read. Other questions? Okay, so here's an attempt to use pipe that it will usually not terminate. So this is a real C program. If you run this on a typical POSIX system, the result will be it will hang indefinitely. So what's going on when that happens? I'll give you a couple minutes to think about it. You can check with your neighbor, see if you have ideas.
Thank you.
Any ideas as to what might be happening that would cause this to hang? Yeah. Does it need to exit? That is a good theory. Let's assume this is like in main, so it returns. We'll at least handle that much. And it's in fact going to hang before we get to the end of this block of code. Yes. Okay. Your suspicion is that write's not flushing its buffer. Yeah, so if we remember, I talked about partial writes, that sometimes write might not write as much as requested. But the default behavior, I said, is usually only happens in an interruption. Otherwise, it waits until it completes, which may